homage, and then we take refuge, reconfirms our vows to the Buddha, and to the other two jewels, the Dharma itself and the Sangha, and deepens our commitment to them. And then the next thing we have is what we call generating bodhicitta. A lot of times this is kind of misunderstood. People think bodhicitta is compassion, but that's not exactly what the bodhicitta is. Bodhi means enlightened. It actually means enlightenment. So the word the Buddha means awake, one that's awake. Bodhi is enlightenment. It's what the one that has woken up to. Citta is a mind. So we're not saying, oh, we're generating compassion, although some texts in their translations will say that, but that's not exactly correct. What we're doing is we are generating the enlightened mind. I mean, to keep picking on that phrase, we're not really generating the enlightened mind. We are arousing the enlightened mind. Why do we say arousing rather than generating? Generating is kind of producing. Like you're going to make something. You're going to create it. But we don't create it because we already have it. The issue is that it is latent. It's just way back there somewhere and we have no access to it. Or for most of us, we completely ignore that it's even there. But our true Buddha nature is, in fact, the enlightened mind. When they say that there is nothing other than mind, they mean the enlightened mind. They mean bodhicitta. There's nothing other than bodhicitta. That's your Tathagata Garbha, those of you studying your Sanskrit. That is your Buddha nature in its essence. Is this bodhicitta. The Mahayana system, different from the Hinayana, is that in the Hinayana we look to overcome all of our passions, all of our mental and emotional affliction. And through sheer willpower and discipline, we set to look through the delusion of what we think and what we feel. And as we cut through that, we can find a nirvanic state, a state of equanimity or rest. And that is the prize of the Arhat path. It's great. It's fantastic. Very few people ever reach that. But when the Buddha introduced the Mahayana path, he says, okay, so we've got these people that are very good at overcoming their passions and overcoming their emotionalism and overcoming their thinking and their views and things like this that they grasp and cling to. And they're able to overcome that. Like Sariputra and, you know, those guys that were really great. And he says, but that prize of the Arhat path is not exactly enlightenment. Gasp by everybody around the Buddha. What do you mean? We've been doing this for like 15 years. Why is this no longer not enlightenment? You say, I never said it was. For you to attain enlightenment, you cannot be solo about it. You can't be on your own. You can't just sit in a cave, overcome your passions, overcome your emotionalism, and then be free of this in a nirvanic state and think that you've attained the level of Buddha. Now what you need to do is arouse your enlightened mind. And so they're all going, isn't that what we are doing? He says, no. You are doing investigation and you are doing all of these techniques to cut yourself away from delusion. And that's all very good. Now what you've done is you've weeded the garden. But now we need this plot of dirt to produce. Produce enlightenment. So what we have to do is generate or to arouse that enlightened mind, your Buddha nature mind. And they say, okay, so how do we do that? He says, there is one method better than all others. And this is where we confuse the term. He says, the best way to generate an enlightened mind is through loving kindness and compassion. Maitri and Karuna. When we, this is where generation comes in. When we generate and cultivate loving kindness and compassion with from a selfless position, the byproduct of doing that in a very sneaky way is the enlightened mind. So then he goes on for the next 25 years to explain this. So the majority of the Buddha's teachings were spent in the Mahayana. So when we ask, what is a very good method for me to engage in now that would allow me to generate and cultivate loving kindness and compassion? How do I do that? And what does that really mean? And this is very important to understand. Loving kindness and compassion cannot be from the surface. It can't be the mask that we put on and we smile at everyone and pretend everything is great. That won't work. It'll work for maybe if you're extremely good at fooling people a week. For most, not really even more than a day or two. Especially if you deal with the public at all. It really, you won't be able to keep it up. And it'll show. People will know that you're very fake. I'm sure you've seen them. You know, you go somewhere and somebody, like in a service position, maybe a supermarket, they hate their job. You come up to the cash register and they're like, hi, have a nice day. And you can tell that they hate what they're doing, and they're not wishing you a nice day at all. They're wishing that you never came in this door, and they don't have to sit there and pretend. But that's what happens when we try to develop loving kindness and compassion on the surface. So Buddha says, the best way to engage and to develop our loving kindness and compassion is actually in secret. We don't even let the public know that we're doing it. Even in public, we don't let them know. So does that mean we're just going to hold positive thought? No, that's ridiculous. Because as you probably know now, if you've spent any time in the Buddhism or in meditation in general, you can't control the mind and you certainly can't control its thoughts. So to try to walk around having positive thoughts means you are constantly in battle of all of the negative thoughts that are also arising in your mind. Wow, this guy is such an idiot. He doesn't even know how to drive, but I wish him a whole lot of peace and happiness. That is not going to work. I mean, your mind will be so disturbed on fighting each other.
Crap. I'm going to start over.
Yeah. But we do have a really awesome technique that we do in secret that does not require us to think positive at all, actually. In fact, it requires not a whole lot of effort to begin with. To begin with. Later, it'll demand a lot. But to begin with, very little effort. It's like learning to cook. You're going to learn to make toast. There's not a whole lot of effort. You set the thing on 4, you put it in, you push the button down, and you wait. That's way different than trying to make a beautiful lamb with, you know, a nice mint chutney, which will take you a tremendous amount of work to get the lamb right. For those of you that eat meat. If you don't, then you can imagine some other hard vegetarian dish. I don't even cook lamb because it's a pain to keep it moist and it's horrible. Anyhow, this technique we can use anywhere, and it only requires one Dharma object. It does actually require a Dharma object. So does that mean that we got to go out and buy our bell and the vajra? No. Do we buy a drum? No. Do we have to have our malas? No. In fact, the Dharma object that you are required to use is innately already in you. It's called breath. See, you didn't even have to buy it. You don't have to go get a better one. You don't have to look and go, hey, is that guy's bell better than mine? Is that drum, do I have a cheap one? Is this a good one? No, you don't have to do that. Ooh, I would prefer that kind of mala than the one I have. No, it's no jealousy issue because nobody walks around going, oh, their breathing is way better than mine. Maybe a health fanatic might do that, but I don't know anyone that personally does. Like, let me see you breathe. Oh, that's so deep. I wish I could breathe like that. Who does that? But this is the tool that we're going to use. Now, this is probably the fastest method to tap into or to see a reflection of the great immeasurable vastness of the enlightened mind. How so? Because what we're going to do is for everything that we don't like, everything that is completely unpleasant, whether that's the action of another person, whether it's a thought that we have, whether it's a thing that we see, like I hate that kind of a tree, or I don't like hot sunny days and wish it would snow. Right? When's winter coming? I'm tired of this sunshine all the time.
And these green leaves.
Yeah, and these green leaves. I want to see orange and red and yellows, right? Anything that you find displeasurable, we take it and we're going to do a simple visualization of smog. If you don't know what smog looks like, it means you've never been to Atlanta, New York, or L.A., you just think of like a pollution from a car, you know, black smoke, but really smog is this horrid brown. But you can use like exhaust from a car, you know, that black horrible stuff that you see and you go, how's that even legal? Right? They're making this place into China. All those people that drive Priuses think that all the time. They see a car and they go, oh, they're killing us. We have a Prius driver here. So we're going to visualize this horrid smoke. And we're going to attach it to our in-breath. And we're going to breathe it in. I'm going to breathe in all of this toxic poison. Yes, I understand that you're going to go, what are you talking about? It's fine. The reason why we can breathe it in is twofold. Number one, we're going to be the superhero. We're going to be the savior, so to speak, and breathe in these toxic fumes and things of our negative thinking, of what we see negative, all kinds of negativity. We're going to make it into black smoke, and we're going to breathe it in, acting as the purifier for the environment that we're in. No one else is doing it, so we're going to do it. Very heroic. The second reason why we're able to breathe it in, because we are going to tap into our Buddha nature, our enlightened mind, which is so vast. It's like those people that would like to take trash from the people on planet Earth, put it in a container, and launch it into space. They're like, hey, space is so big, we put our trash out there. It would literally take 9 trillion light years to even make a speck out there of trash. I don't know if that's true. I'm just making it up. But anyhow, the idea is just that. We can breathe in this toxic stuff from our environment, and it won't affect us, because we're the size of vast open space. So vast that we can fit immeasurable numbers of Milky Ways. End on end. And not even take up a fraction of the space that we have. So we breathe it in. But we don't want to create a vacuum. And here's the tricky part. Once we breathe in this toxic stuff, if it's our own, I don't like what that person is doing. We breathe that in. We breathe in our attitude, not what the person is doing. We're breathing in our own attitude. This is really making me mad. This is upsetting me. We breathe that in. Not the actions of others. We breathe in the mind's thinking and the emotions that we're feeling. And instead of leaving a vacuum, we're going to tap that enlightened mind, and we're going to send back out on the out-breath blessings of at ease. Just like this sutra says. We breathe out a deep, sincere wish that all beings are at ease. That includes ourselves. We can include ourselves in this. Ooh, that really gets under my skin and irritates me to no end. I'll breathe that in, thus saving that person from my ridiculous emotionalism. But they don't have to experience that. And in fact, rather than that, I'm going to breathe out. May both of us just be at ease. May there be no hostile thinkings in me towards that person. May I not perceive anything they're doing as hostile. May I view them just being at ease, being well physically, mentally, emotionally. And more than that, how about we wish them just a general sense of happiness? Okay, maybe happiness is a strong word. How about contentment? How about we just wish that they are at ease and content? How many of us ever get to experience just being at ease and content? It's very rare, right? To really feel it profoundly. That doesn't mean when we're becoming a vegetable on our couch in front of the TV. I don't mean that. I mean that we are actively engaged in something and we check in and just recognize, wow, I'm actually in a state of at ease and content. Normally our mind is racing too much, too many stories, too many things going on, and we don't recognize it. Well, let's just wish on our breathing out. All those molecules that I just put out from my lungs into this space that is now going to affect everyone in it. One little molecule is going to enter into them, and like a virus, it's going to infect them with being at ease and content.
They are going to breathe in your air.
Yes, they are going to. That's right. At some point, people are going to breathe in your air. A great master. I don't care about the controversies. A great master. Actually, two of them. Trungpa Rinpoche and Kala Rinpoche have both said that if only one bodhisattva would do this practice with complete mindfulness, we would begin seeing a decrease in worldwide disease, sickness, and famine. That's an incredible statement. Because when we carry something on the breath, it's just like Dan was saying. It literally is carrying on those molecules. And on this planet, all of us are breathing just repurposed air. The air we breathe is the same air dinosaurs have breathed. Because no one's coming around and vacuuming up all of Earth's air and then pumping in all new air. That's why we have problems with pollution. It just keeps getting recycled, like our water. You ever thought about that? We're not getting new water from anywhere. It's always the same water. It goes through an internal process that filters it. But it's the same water. So when we breathe out this air, if we attach our wish to this air, even when we breathe it in, if we attach that wish of negativity, riding this air, and we breathe that in, there's a chemical process that takes place between air and blood. There's a chemical exchange that happens. And if we think about that, that chemical exchange, I'm actually going to absorb the toxin out of that oxygen molecule. And I'm going to replace it with this blessing. And then I'm sending that back out. We become a purifier. The Buddha says the more that you do this, the more you cultivate the loving kindness and compassion. What happens in doing that is as we get better at the process, we become more mindful and it becomes more profound of a practice. We begin seeing the reflection and hints of our actual enlightened mind. That's how this Tonglen works. That's how we generate the enlightened mind, or let's use correct terms here. That's how we arouse the enlightened mind. And that's why the prayer is always this kind of, may all beings be happy. May they be free from suffering. That's Tonglen, by the way. If you want to attach a saying, there's the saying. Breathe out. May they all be happy. Breathe in. May they be free from all of these pangs of attachment and aversion and so forth. Breathe out. May they have wealth and happiness and well-being, you know, healthy and all of these things. Breathe in their toxic stuff and your own toxic stuff and breathe out all these blessings. Because the space is infinite, you will not run out of blessing. In fact, your entire nature is consistently pumping out these blessings. And what we're doing when we don't do a Tonglen or a practice like that is we're just stockpiling massive hordes of blessings that we're just not sharing. And if you live in Minnesota, you've probably seen a bus that has a picture of food, and it says, cook it, store it, or share it. Otherwise, it's going to go bad. Don't let your blessings in this lifetime go bad. Share them. So this is twofold. This is how we do this sutra of developing this loving kindness and compassion, but it's also how we engage in arousing the enlightened mind and the opening prayers of our daily practices. And so now we're going to actually try this.
There's a question.
Oh.
Is there time for a question?
Oh, yeah.
For those of us who have not accomplished the Arhat path, and all these emotions, good and bad, make, you know, even getting to doing Tonglen difficult, what do we do? Is Tonglen a way to deal with those emotions, or is
absolutely.
It not a way to deal with those emotions?
No, absolutely. And that's a great question, because there's a twofold answer in this. When we are afflicted with a negative emotion, we can you probably already know this. If you're over the age of 25, you probably recognize that you have problems with your emotions. They cause you problems. You've done plenty of things that go, why did I do that, right? I mean, we're full of regret and all of these kinds of things. And almost always it's because of some kind of emotional thing. Ignoring them or giving them too much power. One or the other. We can start with ourselves doing Tonglen by recognizing that all sentient beings suffer these same kinds of afflictive emotion. So when our own emotional state arises, and this is actually more traditional way to start the practice of Tonglen, is to begin with yourself. So whenever you see some kind of emotionalism arising within yourself, even if it's your own thinking, I know some of us, if you leave us alone long enough by ourselves, we will ride a roller coaster of horrific feelings and thoughts and memories, and then spike very high over happy ones, only to come crashing back down again, and we will do this roller coaster. And we all find regrets and things. Oh, why didn't I just do that? Why did I, we will end up with that if we spend enough time alone, which is kind of the whole point of your beginning retreats, is to experience that directly without any entertainment to take you away from it, which usually makes retreats horrific if you are doing a real one, because you go, oh my God, that was terrifying. So, in that state of, I don't really want to look at this, we do look at it. And we say, all sentient beings suffer exactly like this, and all of them look for some kind of entertainment or some kind of diversion from it. So what I'm going to do is breathe into my own. And in breathing in my own, I'm breathing in with the thought that may all these other beings be liberated from this same kind of thing. Even though I have no control right now, I'm completely out of control with my greed or rage or jealousy or whatever you're experiencing. Confusion. Mixed emotion, if you want. There's all of that going on. I just don't know what to do. You can breathe that in. Anything that does not feel content or at ease in yourself, you say, all sentient beings also suffer like this. So I am going to breathe this in. My own, knowing that all beings also feel this. And I want to do this so that they don't have to experience it. And we begin there. We don't even have to be skillful. And when we breathe out, we go, I wish I had my own contentment and at ease. Nope, I don't have it. So I'm going to breathe that in because I'm completely out of control. I'm going to breathe in so hard because it's so terrible. and I'm going to breathe out all these blessings of contentment and at ease. Just don't hyperventilate. In fact, you should just be calm and let the breath naturally and ride it naturally. By the way, we talked about black smoke coming in. When you breathe out, you do this pure white mist, like a beautiful humidifier or something, you know, that is just making the room lovely. Those little misters, you know, when you go to the zoo and it's a super hot day. Mm-hmm. Well, in California, this is what we do. We have these little misters and you can walk through them and, oh, it feels so great, you know. Like that. By the way, another thing about that, when I say you don't have to be skillful, it's fine. Because if you practice breathing, generally you'll calm yourself down by just breathing. It's kind of ridiculous, but our own breathing can calm us down. You guys have probably never heard this, but when somebody panics, a lot of times somebody just goes, okay, just take a deep breath. Right? You guys never heard that before. Why do they say that? Because we need to breathe. There's something completely not magical at all about breathing. Yet because we pay no attention to it, it's really magical when we first start doing it. The paying attention apart, not start breathing, because you've always been breathing. Unless you're dead. Which then we have to have a whole different conversation. But this is what you do, and it requires no skill. Good?
Thank you.
And you don't even need further follow-up. You don't need more teachings, because just do this, and it will naturally on its own, very organically, actually very, in a very, a word that I don't like using, very beautiful way, it will ripen into some very powerful meditation without any further instruction. That's actually all there is. Toxic black smoke coming in, beautiful white mist coming out with blessings. That's all. You'll know how to expand it to the whole world, but you don't have to start there. You just start with yourself, maybe start with that guy across the room from you. You know, your coworker that you just want to strangle. Whatever. The driver that just cut you off on that ramp. If you're married, spouses are great for this. Because that's their primary job, is to help you, to support you on your path to rousing your bodhicitta by causing you all kinds of horrific grief so that you can work with it and overcome your ego clinging. That is their job, if you didn't know that. Which makes them your master. Oh, great guru, thanks for just causing me to fly off the handle. Now I see how out of control I am. And they go, you're welcome. Now stop talking to me until you calm down. They're brilliant. For those of us that don't really have a great master like that, we have a thing called gurus. And that's exactly what they do. Causes all kinds of grief so that we can get over ourselves. This is one of the best, in my opinion, it is the best tool in doing so. Engage it. Now that you have all of this, whether you agreed to it or not, you got a secret empowerment and transmission right now, because that's what Tonglen is. So now you're all empowered to do it. Don't quit doing it. Even once you're a Buddha, fully enlightened, and you're all golden and you're glowing, sitting on a giant throne with your millions of bodhisattvas and monastics around you, keep doing it. Never stop. That's not a samaya, that's just a word of encouragement. Don't ever quit. The minute you do, your heart and your mind will shrink. You'll become petty. To be truly great and open and vast, never stop this. Transforming the Mind worksheet talks about what happens as we're doing it. This is about Tonglen, by the way. And if you want, you can do Tonglen while you're doing this. Each time you recite one of these slogans, you can breathe in the negative aspect that it talks about. And then as you say, Om Mani Padme Hum, because you have to breathe out to speak, you're breathing out the blessing of the positive aspect of the slogan. So let's begin.